If you ask anyone who has had a particularly strong psychedelic experience to try and describe what it actually felt like, you are almost guaranteed to hear one specific phrase.
Right, because standard language just it completely fails in those moments.
Exactly. They usually give you this like helpless shrug because the words fall short and they tell you, it was like a dream, but I was awake for it.
Yeah. People find themselves trying to articulate, the sensation of a room that appears to be breathing.
Or like an impossible chain of logic that just felt perfectly true at the time.
Right. The grammar of the experience is undeniably the grammar of a dream.
And for the longest time, that phrasing was just considered poetry, right? Just a convenient metaphor for an unexplainable trip.
Yeah, just a shorthand.
Well, we are pulling apart a super comprehensive piece from the OOTW Journal today. It's titled Psychedelics and Dreaming is a Trip, a Waking Dream. And the underlying neuroscience here is pointing toward, honestly, a pretty wild
It
possibility.
really is.
We are going to figure out if a trip is quite literally a dream playing out in waking life and look at how this incredibly unique hybrid state of consciousness might actually hold the key to healing severe trauma.
That is huge.
Okay, let's unpack this, because this deep-seated intuition we have about waking dreams, it didn't just pop into existence at like a music festival in the 1960s.
No, not at all. I mean, it stretches back nearly 2 centuries.
Wow.
Yeah. To truly appreciate how deeply rooted this idea is, we have to look at this French psychiatrist named Jacques-Joseph Moreau-Gatour.
Okay.
In 1845, so well before the invention of brain scanners or, any modern understanding of neurotransmitters, he published a book with a truly startling premise.
1845, so he's just going off of what? Pure observation.
Exactly. After observing patients and experimenting with the hashish state, he argued that the drug-induced state and the nightly dream state were fundamentally the exact same biological and psychological phenomenon.
That is wild. I mean, arriving at this massive conclusion purely by watching human behavior and just listening to how people reported their own internal experiences.
Right, and his methodology was considered incredibly radical for his era.
I bet.
He genuinely believed that a sane observer could ingest these substances to, as he put it, study madness from the inside.
Wow. Study madness from the inside.
Yeah. He viewed natural dreaming, feverish delirium, and the psychedelic drug state as distinct branches belonging to a single, unified family of consciousness.
So that 19th century intuition essentially lays the groundwork for all our modern neurological mapping.
Exactly. It created a through line straight into the 20th century. Specifically, it influenced the work of researchers like Allan Hobson.
Oh, right, Hobson.
Yeah, Hobson is famous for creating this highly influential multidimensional map of human consciousness.
Which is fascinating.
It is. He measured our states of mind along three specific axes: the overall activation level of the brain, the volume of information input the brain is currently processing, and the chemical modulation steering it all.
So he essentially built like a 3D coordinate grid plotting everywhere the human mind can possibly go.
That's a perfect way to describe it. Hobson's vocabulary finally gave modern researchers the scientific tools necessary to take the highly subjective psychedelic state and map it physically.
And they placed it right on that exact same coordinate plane as REM sleep, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The concept of the waking dream functioned as a rigorous scientific hypothesis long before it became a cultural catchphrase.
And now we have the modern data to actually measure where these states sit on that grid, which brings us to this staggering study from 2016 by researchers Sens and Tegliazuki.
Oh, yeah, this study's incredible.
They didn't just look at a handful of patients, they compiled a database of over 15,000 written drug reports.
Which just a massive, unprecedented catalog of subjective human experience.
Right. And they took all 15,000 of those, highly personal stories and ran them through a semantic analysis algorithm. They were looking for linguistic patterns. It's basically the equivalent of generating a giant word cloud of the human mind under the influence of every substance imaginable.
I love that analogy.
And out of every single class of drug out there, stimulants, depressants, dissociatives, the language people naturally use to describe serotonergic psychedelics rank closer to traditional dream reports than anything else.
Yeah, the linguistic fingerprint of a classic psychedelic trip is, statistically speaking, totally indistinguishable from a dream.
Okay, but I have to play devil's advocate for a second here.
Go for it.
Language is incredibly flexible, right? Like, I could complain to a friend that my boss is an absolute monster,
Right.
but that doesn't mean a literal biological werewolf is sitting in the corner office.
Hopefully not.
Right. So I'm just struggling to see if this massive word cloud actually proves anything beyond just, you know, human nature. When we experience something completely unexplainable, we reach for the closest familiar metaphor.
Sure.
So is there actual biological proof that the physical machinery of the brain is doing the same thing in both a trick and a dream?
Yes. The underlying biology entirely supports the metaphor.
Really?
Yeah, the physical mechanics of your brain networks are engaging in a remarkably similar process during both of those states.
Yeah.
We can understand this by looking at what neuroscientists call the entropic brain theory.
Entropic meaning entropy, right? Like chaos.
Exactly. In this context, entropy essentially means chaos, fluidity, or unpredictability within your neural networks.
Okay.
Both the psychedelic state and REM dreaming are classified clinically as primary states of consciousness.
Yeah.
And those are defined by elevated neural entropy.
So the brain is functioning in a much less rigid way. It drops the strict order we usually rely on just to get through the day.
Precisely. That flexibility happens because a specific network in your brain begins to loosen its grip. We call it the default mode network, or the DMN.
The DMN, right.
You can picture the DMN as your brain's internal self-model. It acts as the rigid narrator inside your head that constantly works to keep your waking experience orderly, bounded, and logically consistent with your past.
And during both a dream and a psychedelic trip, that strict narrator is basically forced to let go of the wheel.
Exactly. The DMN becomes decoupled from the memory systems located in the medial temporal lobe.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because when that narrator steps away, the brain still has to decide what actually makes it into our conscious awareness.
Right.
And there is a brilliant model from 2001 by Franz Ballenweider and Mark Geyer called the CSTC model.
The corticostriatothalamocortical circuit.
Yeah, which is definitely a mouthful.
It is.
But the absolute star of the show in that circuit is the thalamus. It sits deep in the center of the brain, and it basically acts as the ultimate filter for our reality.
Right.
I always picture the thalamus as an incredibly aggressive email spam filter, or, you know, maybe a massive, intimidating nightclub bouncer.
A bouncer is a great way to look at it.
Right. Under normal, sober circumstances, this bouncer stands at the door and keeps all the bizarre internal static, along with a massive amount of overwhelming external sensory data, completely out of the club. It just keeps your conscious mind tidy and manageable.
Right. The bouncer's entire job is to keep the club from descending into chaos.
Right.
But psychedelics fundamentally disrupt that process by ramping up the serotonin drive in the brain. That flood of serotonin actively weakens the inhibition that normally keeps that thalamic gate half closed.
Basically, the bouncer gets bribed to look the other way.
Exactly. The gate flies completely open.
Wow.
And suddenly, this rush of inner thoughts, suppressed memories, and raw outer sensory signals, they all pour onto the dance floor all at once.
And that mechanism explains the sensory overload, right? The dissolving boundary between yourself and the outside world.
Exactly. And that profound feeling that every tiny mundane detail around you is suddenly incredibly significant. Modern brain imaging actually shows this precise mechanism happening under the influence of LSD.
Really? They can see it?
Yeah. The flow of information traveling from the striatum to the thalamus drops significantly, which is the exact visual signature of a wide-open gate on a brain scan.
That's amazing.
And crucially, natural REM dreaming is also a state of radically altered thalamic gating. In a normal dream, the bouncer locks out the external world, but lets your internal world run completely wild.
So we basically have two different doors unlocked by two completely different keys, but they lead the mind into the exact same room of consciousness.
Yes.
And we actually have physical pharmaceutical proof that this room exists. There was an incredible clinical study run by Crayonman in 2017.
Oh, the ketanserin study.
Yes. They administered LSD to patients and simply asked them to close their eyes and generate mental imagery while wide awake.
Right.
And the images these patients reported became intensely bizarre. They were fluid, utterly illogical, and highly emotionally charged. I mean, it was pure dream material.
But then
midway through, the researchers administered a second drug called ketanserin.
Right. And ketanserin acts as a highly specific chemical roadblock. It is designed to block the serotonin 5-HT2A receptor.
And the moment they chemically block that one specific receptor, the dreaminess completely vanished.
She's gone.
Yeah. The bizarre fluid imagery just stopped dead in its tracks. the waking dream was entirely abolished. That proves the dreamlike quality people report isn't just some psychological reaction to being intoxicated.
No, it's physiological.
Right. It is a physical, biological cascade running straight through that 5-HT2A receptor.
And that receptor is the primary pathway activated by all classic psychedelics.
Mm.
So the biology validates the subjective reports. The waking dream is a measurable physical reality in the brain's architecture.
I am struggling to square something here, though.
Okay, what's that?
If the subjective experience feels the same, and the thalamus is opening the gate in a similar way, then logically, psychedelics must just be a chemical shortcut to triggering actual REM sleep.
I see where you're going.
Like you ingest the compound, it hits that receptor, and your brain is basically tricked into thinking, oh, it's time to sleep, and throws you into REM while your eyes happen to be open.
That is the most logical assumption anyone could make looking at this data.
But I'm guessing I'm wrong.
The plot twist in the neuroscience is that they actually do the exact opposite.
Wait, really?
Yeah. If a psychedelic trip were literally just a chemically forced state of REM sleep,
mm-hmm.
then administering those compounds should naturally deepen and lengthen a person's dreaming.
Right, that would make sense.
But controlled studies prove that they actively push real dreaming away.
They suppress it.
Entirely. A study in 2008 by Barbanoj involved administering ayahuasca to subjects during the day. Another study by Dudisova in 2020 did the exact same thing using daytime psilocybin.
And what happened?
In both scenarios, the drugs functioned as dream suppressants. They significantly lengthened REM latency.
Meaning what?
Meaning it took much longer for the subjects to finally enter REM sleep later that night.
Mm.
Furthermore, they suppressed the overall duration of the REM sleep the subjects were able to achieve.
So the compounds that make you feel exactly like you were dreaming actually stop your brain from legitimately dreaming.
Exactly.
Now, I did see a tiny caveat about microdosing, right? That a very low dose of LSD might delay a slight rebound of REM to the following night, not the night of the dose.
That's right. There is a delayed rebound effect with microdosing.
But the acute, immediate effect of a full trip is absolute REM suppression.
Yes.
So how can a drug that mimics a dream suppress a dream?
What's fascinating here is the neurochemical divergence between the two states.
Okay.
To understand why they clash, we have to look at the different fuels the brain uses for each process. Natural REM dreaming is a cholinergic state. That means it relies heavily on acetylcholine.
Got it.
When you fall asleep and hit REM, your brain's cholinergic neurons start firing rapidly to generate dream imagery. But for that system to turn on, the brain's serotonin and noradrenaline systems have to fall almost completely silent.
Wait, silent?
Yes, REM sleep is, by definition, a deeply serotonin-quiet environment.
So to have a natural dream, your brain basically has to drain the serotonin from the system.
Exactly. And classic psychedelics operate in the exact reverse manner. They act as direct 5-HT2A agonists.
Meaning they flood the system.
Right. They flood the entire system with intense serotonergic receptor signaling. Chemically speaking, they are the polar opposite of natural REM sleep.
Okay, wait. If the chemistry is entirely backwards and the drugs actively prevent real natural dreaming from taking place, how did that massive semantic study with 15,000 reports find that trips are the closest thing to dreams?
Well, a psychedelic trip doesn't achieve its dreamlike state by copying the chemistry of sleep. It arrives at a similar cortical dynamic by taking an entirely different pharmacological road.
Oh, I see.
The brain achieves the same elevated entropy, the same loosened default mode network, and the exact same wide-open thalamic gate. But it uses a massive flood of serotonin to force those doors open, rather than relying on the silence of serotonin.
So the mechanism is different, but the result looks similar.
Right. Because the chemical pathway is different, the end result isn't a carbon copy of a normal dream. If you look closely at the semantic data, the closest linguistic match wasn't standard dreaming.
What was it?
The language of a trip aligned most perfectly with a lucid dream.
Oh, where you are fully aware that you're dreaming while the dream is actually happening.
Exactly. It creates a unique hybrid state. You have the dreaming brain engaged, but it is accompanied by a waking conscious witness.
That makes so much sense.
A trip is not a person asleep. It is the bizarre, emotional, fluid dream logic of REM running at full speed in a mind that is still entirely awake, observing, and capable of remembering the experience.
That distinction right there, the presence of the waking witness, feels like the absolute core of why any of this matters.
It really is.
So what does this all mean for you as the listener? Why should you care that a psychedelic trip is technically a waking, lucid dream, on a neurological level?
Well, the answer lies in the immense therapeutic power that this hybrid state unlocks.
Right. We have to look at what normal REM sleep is actually designed to do for us in the first place.
Exactly. Because ordinary dreams aren't just, you know, random entertainment playing out in the dark. They perform vital biological maintenance.
Maintenance on memory, right.
Yes. During your slow ways and REM sleep cycles, your brain is actively working to consolidate and reorganize your memory. It sifts through the emotional residue of your day, decides what is important to keep, and files those memories away into longer-term storage networks.
Except you sleep right through the entire process. You have absolutely no conscious control over it.
Right.
But psychedelics open up a very similar physiological window. They induce a state of heightened plasticity.
Yes. When you take these substances, they acutely drive a biological mechanism involving BDNF.
Derived neurotrophic factor.
Correct. You can think of BDNF as a highly specialized Miracle-Gro for your brain.
Miracle-Gro, I love that.
It is the physical machinery your brain uses to build new synapses, sprout new neural branches, and literally physically update your emotional memories.
Neuroplasticity.
Exactly. Neuroplasticity is the fundamental ability of the brain to rewire itself based on new experiences. Psychedelics force open a massive window of plasticity that beautifully mirrors the natural memory updating process of REM sleep.
But the critical life-altering difference is that your conscious mind is present for it.
Yes.
It essentially gives you admin access to your own brain's filing cabinet.
That's exactly what it feels like.
Like, imagine your brain is a massive corporate office. Every single night during REM sleep, the lights go out and a night crew comes in to reorganize all the files.
Right.
You have no say whatsoever in where they put things. And sometimes they mistakenly file a highly traumatic memory right at the front of the cabinet where you trip over it every single day.
Which is devastating.
But a psychedelic session turns the office lights on. It opens the filing cabinet and triggers that same deep structural reorganization process, but you get to sit in the room and oversee the filing.
You stay present enough to narrate the experience, steer the emotions, and integrate the memory properly.
And that mechanism is exactly where the clinical payoff is proving to be the most profound, particularly in the realm of trauma treatment.
Oh, absolutely. For an individual suffering from PTSD, the brain's unconscious emotional filing system has essentially broken down.
Right.
That breakdown is why recurrent nightmares are a defining diagnostic symptom of PTSD. The brain is desperately trying to file the traumatic memory in the dark during REM sleep, but the fear response attached to that memory is just too high.
So the system gets overwhelmed.
Exactly. It crashes and the person wakes up in absolute terror. The memory never gets properly filed away as an event that is safely in the past.
Which brings us to the fascinating 2018 research by Fiducia and Mithofer on MDMA-assisted therapy. Now, MDMA isn't classified as a classic psychedelic, but it operates in a very similar therapeutic space when it comes to trauma.
It does. The foundational theory behind their work is that this waking dream state allows for profound memory reconsolidation and fear extinction.
Fear extinction?
Yeah. Instead of suffering through a nightmare where they are totally helpless and paralyzed by sleep, a patient in a guided clinical session can intentionally pull up that exact same traumatic memory.
Because they're awake.
Right. And because of the pharmacological effects of the medicine, they are recalling the trauma while enveloped in a profound, felt sense of physical and emotional safety.
So they are holding the terrifying file in their hands, but they know they are sitting safely in the brightly lit office.
That's exactly it. They are awake, they're acting as the conscious witness, and their brain is operating in a highly plastic, rewirable state.
Wow.
They can pull the file out, examine the contents without triggering an overwhelming terror response, and then refile it into long-term memory with a drastically lower emotional charge attached to it.
It acts as the waking, curable analog of what REM sleep is biologically supposed to achieve for us.
Yes. It allows the mind to finally complete the emotional processing that years of nightmares have failed to resolve.
The idea that we can intentionally access the machinery of our own sleep to heal our deepest wounds is just... it's incredible.
It really is a paradigm shift.
But, you know, knowing just how complex the underlying chemistry has to be to force this state, how the brain has to flood the entire system with serotonin to ironically mimic a serotonin quiet sleep state, we have to address a very persistent internet rumor.
Oh, I know where this is going.
If you've spent any time reading about consciousness or psychedelics online, you have inevitably encountered this theory.
Yeah.
It asks, wouldn't it be a much cleaner, more elegant explanation if the human brain just made its own psychedelic to cause our nightly dreams?
The famous endogenous DMT theory.
The dream molecule. The theory claims that your pineal gland secretly secretes a slow trickle of DMT every single night, and that natural hit of an endogenous psychedelic is what actually causes your dreams.
It's very popular online.
It sounds so perfectly elegant. It ties the trip and the dream together with a single magical bow.
I know, and I hate to break the romantic illusion for everyone, but we need a strict reality check on that concept.
Let's do it.
There is a very comprehensive 2018 review by David Barker that looked deeply into this exact topic.
Okay, what did he find?
Well, to be scientifically fair, DMT is genuinely present in mammalian tissue. Human bodies do produce choice amounts of it naturally.
So it is in there.
It is. But the leap to claiming that it causes our dreams is entirely unproven. There is absolutely zero solid scientific evidence showing that endogenous DMT levels rise during sleep or that it ever reaches psychoactive concentrations in the human brain naturally.
Zero evidence.
None. Its actual biological function in the body remains a total mystery.
So it is basically a modern myth that got out of hand.
Pretty much. The most rigorous scientific reviews classify its role in dreaming as entirely unproven. It is a highly evocative, poetic hypothesis, but it should never be treated as established medical fact.
Right.
And frankly, the honest neurobiological version of this story doesn't need a magic molecule to be profound.
No, it doesn't.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, reality is much messier, but it is deeply more beautiful.
How so?
Well, the overlap between dreaming and tripping isn't caused by a single hidden chemical lever. It is born from incredibly complex brain network dynamics. The resemblance is partial at the level of the thalamus. It's shared at the level of the default mode network, but it is completely broken and reversed at the level of sleep chemistry.
It is a layered, imperfect biological overlap.
Exactly.
And that complexity is exactly what makes it so useful to us.
Wow.
Because if a trickle of DMT were just putting you into normal REM sleep, you wouldn't have the waking witness. You wouldn't have the conscious agency to sit in the office and heal the trauma. The fact that the chemistry is entirely different is the very reason the therapy actually works.
It acts as the ultimate functional bridge between the conscious and the unconscious mind.
So to summarize all of this for you, a psychedelic trip isn't literally sleep. It's not just a heavy nap with vivid visuals.
Far from it.
It is a highly unique pharmacological event where your brain unlocks the heavy doors of REM dream logic, the fluidity, the emotional depth, the neuroplasticity, but deliberately leaves the lights on in the conscious mind.
Yes.
It allows a person to stay completely awake, to remember the experience, and to actively participate in the healing and filing of their own mind.
Which leaves us with a final, lingering question to ponder.
Okay, lay it on us.
We now know that these compounds can artificially force this waking dream state to help us process severe emotional trauma. But considering how remarkably similar the brain's core network dynamics are in both a trip and a dream, you know, the lowered entropy, the relaxed default mode network, the open thalamic gate, could the brain naturally slip into temporary localized waking dreams entirely on its own?
Oh, wow. Without any drugs.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Think about moments of extreme psychological stress or deep sensory deprivation. Or think about moments of intense flow state daytime creativity where a writer suddenly visualizes an entire world or a survivor hallucinates a path out of danger.
Right.
Are those moments just the thalamic gate slipping open for a fleeting second? Could our normal waking hours already be peppered with little micro dreams that we just casually dismiss as our imagination?
Man, it really makes you wonder how solid our waking reality actually is. The brain seems to always be right on the edge of a dream. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the fascinating mechanics of your own mind. And remember, just because you're awake doesn't mean you aren't dreaming.